to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And our topic for today is...
It's not about communication.
I just love this topic title. You know, over the years, I've made a number of videos and, of course, wrote the book that this podcast is based on. And there's a whole little section in the book called It's Not About Communication. And I did a video, It's Not About Communication. And I think I would say this is arguably the snarkiest of my video titles. And so it's going to be a slightly snarky podcast as well. I mean, we don't do much in the way of snarky, do we?
No, we don't.
But this one's going to be bordering on snarky, near snarky. So, you know, I hope you'll enjoy this, or maybe you'll be annoyed by it and you can let us know either way. That's fine. Before we get into our topic, though, let's invite you to comment on our podcast and rate us and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, because that's how people find us. More and more people have been finding us, and we'd like to see that trend continue. And we would also like to put in a word for the book that this podcast is based on. So the book that this podcast is based on is...
Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
That's the book, and the 7-word formula that we call this Couples Therapy in 7 Words is how the book is organized. The 7 words being...
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
So you'll see when you get the book, there are basically 4 sections. There's a section for be kind, a section for don't panic, a section for and have faith, and a section for now go and learn. So in other words, ways that I actually apply this in my work with couples. And it's certainly a good guide to how I work. And of course, I wrote the book because I think it's a good guide to understanding the whole project of being in a couple. So we hope you will acquire the book. And when you acquire the book, hope you will rate comment on it on Amazon, especially because, you know, for good or ill, that's how people find out about books these days mostly. It's available anywhere books are sold. It's available as a on paper. It's available as an audiobook, and I am the narrator. And it's available for Kindle as well. So whatever format you like, you can get the book. And we are going to be planning some actual in-person events in our area. We live in Vermont. So, you know, if you're anywhere in the Northeast, listen for that. We'll be actually planning on that when it becomes possible in COVID terms to do that, which looks like it's going to be happening this summer and fall. So we're excited about that.
And if you enjoy our podcasts and you'd like to bring us to your community, let us know that too. We'd be happy to come and do an appearance for you.
So our topic for today, as we said earlier, is it's not about communication. Now, why do you suppose I would, I'll ask you, Judy, of course, you've read the book, I know that, but why do you suppose I would have that snarky title?
Well, you know, I think you hear, and I hear a lot from my friends, and you probably hear from couples, is that, you know, we can't communicate. You know, I'm talking, he's talking, we're just not communicating. Mm-hmm. If they're not communicating, how could you say it's not about communications? What is it about?
What a great question. Yes, exactly. Yeah, you know, I haven't counted, but if I were going to do kind of a seat of the pants guess as to what percentage of the couples say in their first session, one of the reasons they're there is we're having trouble communicating,
right?
It's got to be like 75 or more percent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that's what everybody talks about.
Yep.
So how do I get off saying it's not about communication?
Yeah.
Well, here's where I will indulge myself in a bit of snark.
Okay.
You know, everybody says it's about communication, but it's rarely about communication, because to say that they're having trouble communicating, usually what they're saying is, help us learn how to be better communicators. And what I often point out is, you're already really good communicators. The problem isn't that you're not good communicators. The problem is what you're communicating. You're communicating it very effectively. Now, I have to say, I think, you know, the proof of this, if you will, is that there is the very occasional exception. I have actually met folks who actually have communication problems. Typically, they are somewhere on the spectrum, on the autistic spectrum. Mm-hmm. In other words, there are people who, for whom to detect what someone else is communicating, you know, the social cues,
right,
they have a hard time with that. That's the nature of the problem that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of certain forms of being neuroatypical.
Right.
So in those situations, people actually benefit from learning quite consciously, how do you recognize when somebody is happy with you or angry with you or annoyed with you or bored by you? And you know, those kinds of things. Those are skills that people who work with folks who are neuroatypical help them with. And I've talked with numbers over the years, numbers of neuroatypical people who find those are very helpful kinds of skills to learn. So those are actual communications problems. But that's not, well, there's a reason why it's called neuroatypical, right? That's
right.
Not typical. The vast majority of couples I deal with, neither party is on the autistic spectrum. So they're actually quite effective at communicating. The problem is what they're communicating. So what are they communicating?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get people who say, oh, we, anytime we start talking about something, we start arguing. Well, what they're communicating then is something that triggers themselves and the other. You know, typically they're communicating mistrust,
right,
or anger,
mm-hmm,
or some kind of disappointment. You know, they're communicating it quite effectively. So that, you know, when I say it's not about communication, it's not that you need to learn how to communicate better. It's that what you need to look at is what the heck you're communicating, because maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, and it's how you're communicating.
Well, it is also
well,
how
I
you're
guess.
Communicating, but that's my point is it's how you're communicating because of what you're communicating. Do you see what I mean? If you're not angry, you'll be communicating in a way that doesn't convey anger.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're conveying goodwill, that will tend to shape the communication in such a direction that you'll be exchanging goodwill. Now, it's not perfect, right? If you're conveying goodwill, but I'm in a really foul mood and I'm conveying a foul mood, I suppose that's not going to do wonders for, you know, how the communication goes, right?
Right.
But that's not because I need to be more skilled at communicating. It's because I need to look at my foul mood.
Yeah.
And maybe my foul mood is for some reasons that I'm not 100% conscious of. And if I learn to be more conscious of that, you know, it'll go better.
And maybe you just would need to communicate that better, that I'm in a bad mood. Don't talk to me now.
Yeah, exactly. And be willing to say that. And also, maybe I need to look at what I feel entitled to say or communicate when I'm in a foul mood.
Mm.
Because just because I'm in a foul mood doesn't, I think, shouldn't entitle me to be nasty to you.
Mm-hmm.
It could entitle me to convey the fact that, gee, I'm really feeling off today. You know, sorry, I'm not real available. But I don't think it should entitle me to treat you badly. You know, that's my
definitely
being.
Definitely not.
Exactly. So those are all, you know, things around communication. And while we're on the subject, people will often ask for rules for how to argue.
Yeah.
Because what they're saying is, well, as soon as we have some serious disagreement, it escalates and gets into a nasty argument or fight or something, and you know, we don't get any place, and it's really frustrating. And I have great sympathy for that. The problem is the rules they're looking for probably aren't going to help them. And here, again, in my snark mode today, there's zillions of books you can buy and articles you can read and therapists you can go to who will be delighted to give you lots of rules for how to have a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
And, right?
Yes, we've heard those. Would you restate what you just heard?
Yeah, yes.
You know?
That's one of the classics. This uh-huh. Exactly. Active listening, that's kind of part of that. The idea of I statements as opposed to you statements.
Uh-huh.
You know, rather than saying you're doing X, Y, and Z, you can say when you're doing that, I feel, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm. Are those effective?
Well, it's not that they're not effective. It's that they miss the point altogether.
Aha.
If you look at people who have reasonably goodwill toward each other and aren't in a panic, key
mm-hmm.
point there,
mm-hmm.
people who aren't in a panic and are pretty well disposed to whoever they're talking to tend to behave according to those rules, right? That's what it's looked like. You will see that, you know, if we're getting along well, if we feel happy toward each other mostly, but we're having a disagreement, you know, the way I'll talk to you it because of the goodwill aspect, and I'm not in a panic because I feel like I can say something I disagree with you about, and it's gone well before, so I have every reason to think it's going to go well again. So I'll say it in such a way that conveys goodwill, but also says honestly what's bothering me. And I have good reason to think that your response will convey goodwill back, but also say you have a different point of view, right? Mm-hmm. And we can work it out.
Right.
That's not a problem. We don't need rules for that. If I'm panicking, and this is really the catch-22, right? If I'm in a panic, the part of my brain that will be able to implement those rules is largely offline. That's the problem.
What do you mean by that?
So if I'm in a panic and I'm thinking, okay, this is one of those times when I need to remember that rule about don't call somebody names, right? Obviously, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that rule about speak in terms of your own experience, you know, I statements rather than you statements. Don't be accusatory. Don't criticize the person's character and so on and so on. Those kinds of really nice rules.
Right.
When I'm in a panic, those rules aren't available to me. I have to not be in a panic to be able to calm myself enough to think, oh yeah, this is one of those times where if I just vent, it's probably not going to help. I really need to find a way of being calm enough so I can actually hear what she's saying, you know?
Why do I have Frank Costanza's Serenity Now running through my head?
That's for listeners out there who are the Seinfeld in the Seinfeld cult, they'll understand what you're referring to. Yeah, exactly. So that's the problem. You know, the rules are descriptions of what people do when they're not in a panic. Mm-hmm. But if they're in a panic, they're not going to have access to the rules.
Right.
That's the catch-22. And what I point out to people is you already know the blasted rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need somebody to tell you the rules. What you need to do is be calm enough so that you can implement what you already know. And, you know, this fits in, of course, in my whole shtick about be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Mm-hmm.
The be kind is a way of saying even when you're having a difference, certainly respect the other person's basic humanity. Respect that we're all part of the same human kinship. Do you
mm-hmm.
know, that's what I mean by
right.
be kind. Radical respect for everybody's humanity. When you're in a panic, that goes away because it's all about, you know, it feels existential. It feels like if I don't get this point across, I'll die or
yeah.
I'll be annihilated.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when people get violent, either verbally or physically.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't about knowing how to say it, you know, and it's so amazing to me because people will often say, well, I just need to learn how to say that better, when what they're saying is destructive. You know, the problem is you need to learn how to say better that you think your partner is an idiot.
Uh-huh.
The problem is you need to not think your partner is an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely, that's a disrespectful way to think. You know, you can disagree with your partner, but not think them an idiot. And so that's, you know, that whole shtick about everybody needs to learn these. That's the other thing I'll say about the rules that people want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, as I noted, if you're in a panic, you're not going to have access to them. And if you're not in a panic, they're cumbersome. They're ridiculous. You know, do we really want to have a conversation where every time either one of us says something, I have to say, well, this is what I understood you to say.
No.
You want to do that?
No, we don't want to do that.
When we're talking about, you know, what TV show do you want to watch? I mean, seriously? And we don't need to do that if we're feeling, you know, happy toward each other. Right?
Right.
My God. I mean, it's incredibly cumbersome. So what I've just done is rendered a great deal of the self-help universe and a great deal of the therapy universe ridiculous. Because I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm part of that. So where do I get off saying that?
I don't know. Well, you've got a book, so you can get off saying that.
That's right. That's my controversial stance, doggone it. And, you know, it's funny. I've mentioned this before in other podcasts. We've plugged, we interviewed Batsheva Marcus, and mm-hmm. actually hope, if she's listening, we hope to interview you again, Batsheva. She has a wonderful book out with which I don't completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite chapters or sections in her book, Sex Points, is when she warns against people like me. I love that. You know, she didn't say it that way. She's much nicer than that. But she's implying it. She's saying, hey, watch out for couple therapists who think it's all about relationship, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, yeah, watch out for couples therapists who think it's all about communication.
Yeah.
Watch out for therapists who just say, if you follow these rules for how to communicate, by golly, that's going to give you a, you know, that's mm-hmm. going to be productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's going to turn you into an idiot. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, I think that leads us up to our listener question of the week.
Mm-hmm. That's a great segue. And I have to tell you, Judy, because you picked out this question. And I loved the question when I looked at it, and listeners, you'll be hearing it shortly, because here I just did my rant, you know, about it's not about communication.
Mm-hmm.
You came up with one where, damn it might be about communication. So we'll have to talk about that, but go ahead and read the question.
Okay. Tanya writes, Dear Dr. Chalmer, I've been together with Ted for 8 years. We're both in our 30s, no children. I am growing increasingly frustrated with our lack of communication. Ted has always been somewhat quiet and shy, but for the past few months, I feel like he's almost absent. I know this is going to sound really stupid and petty, but it started with small things, like I'd ask him what he'd want for dinner. He'd say, I don't care, you decide. Then I'd make dinner and he'd say, you know I don't like meatloaf, which frankly I didn't know because I've made it many times before. So I asked him, why didn't you ever tell me before when I've made it? And he replied, I didn't want to hurt your feelings. So I actually thought that was sweet until it started happening with other stuff. I'd ask him to pick a movie to watch, then he'd tell me to pick it instead. I'd pick a movie and he'd tell me, I don't like those kinds of movies. I'd become annoyed because he's telling me to pick, then he tells me he doesn't like it. What am I supposed to do? I also usually shop for his clothes because in the past he told me he couldn't be bothered. Last week I asked him why he never wears the shirts I bought him a month ago. He told me he doesn't like them, so I told him he can get his own clothes from now on. I never know lately what he's going to like because he never tells me until it comes to a head. How can I get him to talk to me like a reasonable person? He says he's trying to spare my feelings, but I think he's actually hurting my feelings by being passive-aggressive. What can we do?
Well, gee, Tanya, what a great question,
yeah.
set of questions. And so, you know, my first thought in the terms of this topic, you know, it's not about communication.
Uh-huh.
I can fit this into that,
mm-hmm.
right? I can say, well, this isn't so much about lack of communication skill. This is about fear, you know?
In what sense?
Ted's afraid to talk to her. Ted's afraid to tell her how he feels.
Oh.
He's afraid to say, you know, when she says, what would you like for dinner?
Yeah.
You know, so apparently she's the one who makes dinner mostly, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying, well, not meatloaf, you know, whatever. He is afraid. He seems to be afraid to hurt her feelings.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and her initial reaction to that was, oh, isn't he sweet? He doesn't want to hurt my feelings. Well, that's noble, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hurt your
right.
feelings. I hope you don't want to hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But as I preach in the book, one of the chief skills of intimacy, you know, of having an intimate relationship, which is to say somebody with whom you can be emotionally present and honest,
mm-hmm.
one of the chief skills is the willingness to possibly hurt your partner's feelings, not because you want to,
right.
but in spite of the fact that you don't want to. You know, it's like, well, I'm going to tell you this because if I don't tell you this, it's going to make it worse, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I love you and I care about you, but I don't want to let this go on because it's just going to, you know, it's going to frustrate both of us, you know.
Yeah.
So he's afraid. So there's some piece of that where it's, you know, it kind of fits into my thing. This isn't about a skill in communication. This is about willingness to communicate.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, boy, it sounds like Ted's got a lot of hangups about, you know, not wanting to hurt her feelings. And I guess, like you just said, the fear of intimacy because it's having the opposite effect, right?
Well, sure. I mean, that's the point, right? If he would have the courage to risk her being unhappy with what he says, if it's important enough, and the irony there is, it's important to her. She'd rather hear, oh, you don't like meatloaf, even though I've made meatloaf umpteen times, so she's going to be kind of annoyed with that. But I, you know, she's not trying to ram meatloaf down his throat. She's trying to make dinner that he'll like because it makes her feel good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if he'd be willing to go ahead and do that, that would be fine. Now, I have to say, that's what I said before. It's like, doggone it, you picked out one where maybe it is about communication, because there may be some piece of neuroatypicality here. I've seen that. You know, I have seen folks where this one of my favorite examples, I actually cite this in the book, is somebody I worked with for quite a while who actually realized himself after quite a long time that I had worked with him. And, you know, he's not a young man. And he realized himself that maybe he's somewhere on the spectrum, because he was reading about Asperger's, you know, syndrome and, and found it, gee, it seemed to sound like a lot of his life. Because one of his thing that I just find is such a great example is if his wife would ask him a question to which he did not know the answer, he would just sit there. He would not say anything, because he figured to say something would be wasting her time, because she asked him a question and he doesn't know the answer. That's actually fairly consistent with, you know, high-functioning autism.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't get the meta communication there. You know, if you say something to me, you're saying what you're saying, of course, but the meta communication is, by the way, did you hear me, and do you care?
Right.
You know?
Right.
If you don't say anything, either you didn't hear, you know, you might say to me, if you didn't don't say anything, either you didn't hear anything or you don't care enough to about the fact that I'm sitting here waiting for your answer. You know, it feels bad, but he literally didn't know that the person I'm talking about. And there may be a piece of this in Ted. You know, sometimes when people present as quiet and shy, as she said, there sometimes is an element of neuroatypicality about that. It's like he doesn't quite get that there's that she really wants to know that. You know, he doesn't quite understand how she's feeling.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite got the wiring to detect. His empathy detector is, he needs some conscious skill that he hasn't developed yet. You know?
Fascinating, in the words of Dr. Spock.
Exactly, yeah.
Speaking of not being able to read cues.
Yeah, exactly. And right, and they really played with that, you know, and not Dr. Spock, Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock, right.
Dr. Spock, we're dating ourselves. Dr. Spock came way before Mr. Spock.
Yes, I'm talking about Mr. Spock. Yes, you're right. Doctor
exactly.
was Benjamin.
Yeah,
this is
right.
Leonard Nimoy.
This is Leonard Nimoy, yeah. May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace.
So, yeah, go ahead.
No, just, you know, it just seems so interesting that Ted, where in the past couldn't be bothered, you know, to think about food, to pick out clothing, to pick out movies. He's always relied on Tanya to do that. And now, you know, I don't know if it's because they're, you know, cooped up in the house with each other during this year of COVID, but, you know, maybe he's starting to assert himself a little bit more, but maybe, like she said, it's kind of in a passive-aggressive way. Well, where she sees it as passive-aggressive, he just might see it as something else.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting.
Not wanting to hurt her feelings.
He's willing to say, it's funny, he didn't just say, I don't like meatloaf. He said, you know, I don't like meatloaf. That's the part that you could say, well, that's kind of passive aggressive. It's like, hey, dude, you never told me. How am I supposed to know this? You know,
And he's not wearing the clothing, but he doesn't want to tell her he doesn't like them.
And he's willing to say it, you know, because lots of people would just flat out lie at that moment.
Well, yeah, say, but only just, when she confronts him.
Yeah, but I'm just mean, even when she confronts him, she's saying, why aren't you wearing the clothes I bought you? And, you know, there are plenty of people who would avoid it, and they just wouldn't say that. You know, they wouldn't say, I don't like it. They would say, oh, I just haven't, you know, gotten around to it, or I forgot they were there, or who knows, you know. So he is willing to say some, and maybe that's indicative of some other stuff going on in their relationship that, you know, things are starting to grate a little bit because they're not, because there's this breach of intimacy. They're not being honest with each other. They're not letting each other know, you know. When there's a flow, and by which I just mean when intimacy is working well, you know, when people are feeling good about themselves and each other and the relationship, they'll tend to be honest. I'm not saying they won't be tactful. They'll still be tactful, but they'll be honest because they'll feel like it matters. You know, it's like, no, I want you to know how I feel, even if it isn't exactly how you wish I would feel. And vice versa, you know, because then I know you better and it feels good to know you better. it feels good to know you better when it's going well. And this gets back to my point about, well, often it's not about communication, you know. It doesn't feel good to know you better when it's not going well.
Yeah.
And people will tend to try and avoid it, and that's when things just get worse, because you cut off intimacy. And, you know, the big thesis of my book is that intimacy is every bit as important as stability. And if you cut off either one, it's going to become destabilizing ultimately.
Yeah, and I think, well, when Tanya asked what can we do, I think what they can do is have sit down and have an honest conversation with each other. And she's got to let him know that, you know, she's not going to get angry and reject him if there are things that she does or makes or says that he doesn't like, mm-hmm. that he's got to be able to be honest with her.
Yeah, and what that requires of him, and this I've worked with couples where this is an interesting paradox almost, because what that requires of him, of course, is the courage to try that, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because it's scary, right? It's
right.
Like he doesn't know how she's going to react, and he seems to be kind of afraid of that.
Right. Well, he can start with baby steps, you know, these are some things I don't like for dinner.
He can, but the other piece it requires, it's not just the courage.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll work with a couple where the problem is the guy in the Ted role here doesn't want it the way she wants it. She's looking for intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really, it's not merely that he's afraid of it. It's that he's not wired to want it.
Mm.
That can be really frustrating. You know, it's mm-hmm. like he doesn't care that much about connecting. He'd rather just have things be smooth.
Mm.
And if that's true, it's harder. You know what I mean? It's not impossible, but sometimes it is. It's harder. She gets really frustrated because it's not merely that he doesn't seem to have the chutzpah, where that pops in my mind, you know, the balls, so to speak, to confront her or to say, you know, just be honest with her. It's that he doesn't really want to that much. He'd just be happy if things were smooth.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of confronting. I think it's just a matter of speaking up and not mm-hmm. being such, you know, a marshmallow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, as I say, there are people who just need to learn to grow a pair, but mm-hmm. there are people who it isn't just about that. It's about saying, why would I want to engage at that level? You know, they're looking for a much less intense kind of intimacy, if at all.
Yeah, but that can, you know, be the death spiral for passion.
Well, to coin a phrase.
To coin a phrase.
for people who don't know, that's one of the chapters in my book.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, as we've talked about, and readers of your book and listeners to the podcast know that, you know, for a relationship to grow, it needs that level of intimacy. And if he's so scared and is avoiding intimacy, then they're never going to have that deep relationship that it seems like Tanya wants.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the issue. That's what I'm saying. It may not just be about fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, you know, fear you can deal with. You mm-hmm. can take risks. You can learn to try, and it usually pays off well. But this isn't only fear. It may be, and see, this again relates to that possibility that may be somewhere on the spectrum. It may not only be about fear. It may also be about just not having those receptors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's
sure.
like he's not looking for intimacy.
Yeah.
That would be really frustrating for Tanya, and often is. So, Tanya, I hope this discussion has been helpful to you. And naturally, says my therapist self, I'm thinking, yeah, couples work might be useful here
mm-hmm.
If he's willing and you're willing. And maybe this is just more a matter of saying, hey, come on, let's talk about this. And they, you know, if she can get Ted to listen to this podcast along with her, then maybe they don't need therapy. Who knows?
Who knows? But yeah. we hope we've given you some things to think about and to discuss with each other. So I want to ask our other listeners here, if you have questions for us or topic suggestions, feel free to email us. That's bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, you will see there is a podcast tab. If you go to that, you will be able to suggest, not only will there be an invitation basically to email us, frankly, to suggest topics, but you could actually schedule yourself as a guest. It's linked into my calendar, and you can schedule a time when we will interview you. And in the process of signing up for that, we'll be asking you, gee, what would you like us to interview you about? And that's how we'll know if you might be a good fit for the podcast. I also want to mention, you'll note that today's podcast, we're back to talking about some of the topics in the book and some, you know, more general couples therapy topics. We've also been doing what we've been having a whole lot of fun with, and we've gotten some feedback from listeners who've been having a whole lot of fun as well. We've been doing interviews with biblical characters. Now, those of you who have listened to this podcast know we are not like fundamentalist types. You know, that is not what we're about. But we are Jewish and very involved in, you know, Jewish study. And we've been having a blast interviewing these biblical characters. And the thing that's really been getting to me, and we've talked about this, Judy, is as we interview them, we've learned stuff about them we didn't know before, which I think is really cool. And we've actually covered stuff in those interviews, which, I mean, they are partly, I think, if I may say, pretty funny.
They are pretty funny.
they're kind of hilarious. But in addition to hilarious, they're also covering a lot of the same stuff we're talking about in these kind of podcasts as well.
Yeah, they really get to the meat at relationship problems.
Yeah. So I want to invite people to check that out. If you want to do that, you'll see there's on the podcast tab, there's a link to a listing specifically of those. You know, we sort of list them separately. They're still available through the same podcast channels, but you can also get a hold of the biblical character interviews as well. And we're going to be doing some more of those down the line as well. So before we sign off here, we want to again do a brief commercial for the book.
And the book is Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And if you happen to check out the Amazon listing for that, and you can find that easily by just searching for Reigniting the Spark and or Dr. Bruce Chalmer, and you'll find it on Amazon easily. You'll see there are some reviews there, and a fairly recent review that really stressed the faith angle of the book. I just think it's, you might want to check that out along with a lot of other reviews there as well. We would love it if, when you get the book, if you would review the book as well. And of course, you don't have to get it through Amazon. You can get it anywhere books are sold. So just ask for it. And as I mentioned earlier, listen to this space and watch for some actual in-person book events that we'll be scheduling sometime over the next few months as the COVID situation permits.
So until next time, remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.